Today's readings are all from the book of Job in the Old Testament. The first one is from Job chapter 4, starting at verse 1. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, "If one ventures a word with you, will you be impatient? Yet who can keep from speaking? Behold, you have instructed many, and you have strengthened the weak hands. Your words have upheld him who was stumbling, and you have made firm the feeble knees. But now it has come to you, and you are impatient. It touches you, and you are dismayed. Is not your fear of God your confidence, and the integrity of your ways your hope? Remember, who that was innocent ever perished? Or where were the upright cut off?" We're going to continue reading from chapter 8, verse 1. Then Bildad the Shuhite answered and said, "How long will you say these things, and the words of your mouth be a great wind? Does God pervert justice, or does the Almighty pervert the right? If your children have sinned against him, he has delivered them into the hands of their transgression. If you will seek God and plead with the Almighty for mercy, if you are pure and upright, surely then he will rouse himself for you and restore your rightful habitation. And though your beginning was small, your latter days will be very great." The last bit of the reading is from chapter 11, starting at verse 13. "If you prepare your heart, you will stretch out your hand toward him. If iniquity is in your hand, put it far away, and let not injustice dwell in your tents. Surely then you will lift up your face without blemish. You will be secure and will not fear. You will forget your misery. You will remember it as waters that have passed away. And your life will be brighter than the noonday. Its darkness will be like the morning. And you will feel secure because there is hope. You will look around and take your rest in security. You will lie down and none will make you afraid. Many will court your favor. But the eyes of the wicked will fail. All way of escape will be lost to them, and their hope is to breathe their last."
Are we reaping what we've sown? This first slide that's going to come up is a thought-provoking meme that's been doing the rounds. And then this next slide was a news headline. "Nature is sending us a message," says UN Environment Chief. The article suggests that it's almost always human behaviour that leads a virus like this to impact humans. And then, finally, Hulk Hogan is one of many who claim this is an act of God. "In 3 short months, just like he did with the plagues of Egypt, God has taken away everything we worship," says the wrestler. He goes on to quote the Old Testament to suggest that if we humble ourselves, God will heal our lands. Well, Job is one of the most famous sufferers in the Bible. The poor man was metaphorically struck by lightning repeatedly in the space of minutes as the devastating messages piled up. First, his business gone, then his employees killed, and most guttingly, his 10 children all wiped out in an instant. And yet he refuses to curse God. It's amazing. But there are many stages of grief. And in chapter 3, Job groans. "Why did I not die at birth? Why did the knees receive me? Why is light given to him who is in misery? Why is light given to a man whose way is hidden, whom God has hedged in?" That's all very real. But I want us to focus on his friends, sometimes called Job's comforters. Even as Job howls in the ashes, they turn up and confidently pronounce, "We know why." Initially, they said nothing. They wept with the one who wept, model pastoral care. But I'm afraid they then opened their mouths and things went downhill quickly. They're wrong, Job's friends, just to be clear. Wrong about Job, wrong about God. God himself is the one who makes that clear at the end of the book. But the need to find answers is very strong, isn't it? They say it's not suffering that destroys a person, but suffering without a purpose. I used to meet with a man who, him and his wife, had lost a baby at the point of birth. Total shock. The pregnancy had been fine, awful. And quite quickly, he was wanting to meet up and discuss God and why. Very easy to wander into speculation at that moment, pretend we know more than we do. The particular error of Job's friends runs deep in the human psyche. So whether COVID-19 has wreaked havoc in your family, and I'm sorry if it has, or whether we're thinking of making sense of this at the big level, the worldview of these friends needs to be rebutted. Our big point, our first point, is that life is not as simple as you reap what you sow. That's their basic explanation. Eliphaz is up first. 4, verse 7. Remember, who that was innocent ever perished? Or where were the upright cut off? One of the things that makes these friends' speeches confusing is that they say lots of things that are kind of true, including 4, verse 8. As I have seen, those who plough iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. You reap what you sow, right? Partly just nature. So my son likes to think of himself as a 5-year-old urban farmer. We're growing beans just out here, and obviously I tell him that he's an agricultural genius. But in fact, it's very easy, even in central London. You sow bean seeds, you reap beans. Watch people's lives unfold. You tend to see this principle worked out. So spend your whole time getting drunk, or as a gossip, or a cheat. Generally, there will be negative consequences. Abuse the planet. Sure, all kinds of knock-on effects, and there are plenty of theories at the moment about the loss of biodiversity, creating the conditions for a virus like this to flourish. And it's more than just cause and effect here. Verse 9 says, by the breath of God they perish, and by the blast of his anger they are consumed. We live in a moral universe where God sees and cares, where he punishes injustice. The wicked will perish on the day of God's judgment. You reap what you sow in that sense. The New Testament quotes this and agrees. But you see how Eliphaz has pushed this principle too far. Bad people come to ruin. You've come to ruin, Job. So what does that tell us about you? Verse 7, who that was innocent ever perished? Well, yes, you reap what you sow, but sometimes a brick just lands in your plant pot. And yeah, it's the same message from Bildad, the next friend, 8 verse 4. If your children have sinned against him, he has delivered them into the hand of their transgression. Remember, this man's children died instantly when a house fell on them. This guy is suggesting those children deserved it. Can you imagine saying that to a grieving dad? Great friends, so glad they came to sympathize. And yet, because this is Bildad's mindset, his advice to Job has to be, 8 verse 5, if you will seek God and plead with the Almighty for mercy, if you are pure and upright, surely then he will rouse himself for you and restore your rightful habitation. I.e., stop sinning and all will be sunny again. But Job is upright. There are no unconfessed sins in his life. So far is the third friend, and I'd love to say it's so far so good, but so far no better, unfortunately, in chapter 11. And don't mishear this. It's right to warn about judgment. If you ignore God all your life, there will be consequences. You will reap what you sow. It's also true to say, at the big level, our collective decision to ignore the Maker's instructions is what's led to this cursed and dysfunctional world that we experience, and where viruses like this are just one of the horrible consequences. But at the micro level of any particular disease or any particular individual's suffering, it's way too simplistic to presume that they are reaping the consequences of particular wrongs that they have done. In chapter 21, Job has some observations of his own, namely that the wicked prosper all over the place. Why do the wicked live, reach old age, and grow mighty in power? Their offspring are established in their presence, and their descendants before their eyes. Their houses are safe from fear, and no rod of God is upon them. They say to God, "Depart from us. We do not desire the knowledge of your ways." My gran died aged 99 just in October, and the other evening, suddenly on the BBC main news, the nursing home where Gran had lived was mentioned. Sadly, 20 elderly folk from there have passed away from coronavirus. At its crudest, the friend's way of thinking is that those old people who died at Beerland's care home were worse sinners. But Job speaks to a more biblical reality. It may be that the elderly folk who've in that home always said, "Depart from me, God," are the ones who are still alive and warm in their beds. Well, so what from all of this? And I look forward to your questions. The number will come up on the screen, and we'll have a few minutes at the end to engage with some of those. The first implication I want to mention is about a right attitude to suffering and actually to prosperity. When I was young, we loved a movie called The Sound of Music. In those days, you had to actually go to what was called a video shop to actually pick up a cassette and watch the movie. And Mum would always say, "Get The Sound of Music." We would always come back with Star Wars. But anyway, there's a scene in The Sound of Music where Fraulein Maria and Captain Von Trapp are declaring their love for each other. And Maria is just amazed. She was poor, she was a nun, can't believe that the rich, handsome captain wants to marry her. She bursts into spontaneous song, as they do in musicals, and she sings this. "Nothing comes from nothing, nothing ever could. Somewhere in my youth or childhood, I must have done something good." Do you get the worldview? You could call it karma. Doing well, I must deserve it. Things going badly, I must deserve that too. And to be honest, it's how sufferers themselves often feel. You can see why it's compelling. It gives a sense of purpose. And it possibly gives a way out, because if I can correct my ways, maybe the suffering will end. Yes to cause and effect. Yes to negative behaviour leading to negative consequences. Yes to, at the big level, sin leading to death and us all deserving God's judgment. But I'm afraid, Hulk Hogan, that it's wrong to presume the mind of God and pronounce that in a specific way we are reaping what we've sown in terms of his judgment right now. Jesus tells the people of his day very clearly, stop making that assumption. So God sometimes punishes nations for their sins in the Old Testament, that's what's going on now. How do you know? Or God always wants to bless his people with good health, so there must be something spiritually wrong, a lack of faith, if you've got the virus. Again, how do you know? If you're suffering, it means you must have unconfessed sin in your life. Well, there are a couple of places where the New Testament talks about God disciplining his children. Hebrews 12 is one. But in the context there, it's about the normal Christian life and struggles being a refining process that God uses to make us grow, rather than them being punished for any particular sin. So rather than asking why has God caused this on us or allowed it, a better question from Hebrews 12 might be, how can we grow through this time? And at a general level, there'll be lots to say about environmental lessons learned, improvements we can make in preparing for pandemics, loads more to say on what we're learning about neighbourliness and the importance of family life and just a simpler life. Christians will be finding all kinds of opportunities for spiritual growth in this time. Ask more about that in the question time if you want. And Jesus in Luke chapter 13 would say to all of us, the main issue is not what have we done or why are they particularly suffering. But Jesus would ask us to learn a lesson from any tragedy, to let this moment preach a sermon to us, as it were. And that sermon says, look at the fragility of life. Think urgently about the day you meet God and ask yourself, are you ready? So a right attitude to suffering. And then the second implication as we finish is about being more humble in what we think we know about God generally. When George Bush was the president of America, his defense secretary was a man called Donald Rumsfeld. This was in the era of the war in Iraq. And at one news conference, Rumsfeld was grilled on what was known of the Iraqi government's link to terrorists. Rumsfeld replied, there are things we know, there are things we know we don't know, and there are things we don't know that we don't know. The guy was lampooned for sounding nonsensical, but more careful observers realized he was onto something. See, whether you're talking about military strategy or response to a global pandemic, wisdom lies in being humble enough about the things we don't know, probably whole categories of knowledge that we aren't even aware of at the moment. And hasn't it been the case in the current crisis that the politicians who've sounded most careful and credible are the ones who've been most willing to admit bravely what they don't know? There's lots we know about God in the Bible, but we don't know why he's allowed COVID-19, and we mustn't pretend we do. Job's friends are so confident in the way they spout off. Where was the space for the spiritual battle? Satan is involved in Job's story. Do you know, our faith as we endure hardship is something that God might be using to show his glory in the heavenly places. Isn't that good of him that our little old lives could have such cosmic purposes? No space for that thought in the friend's way of thinking. And no space with them for a delay in God's timescale. We still live in the middle of the story where there are loose ends and unresolved tensions. They need a longer view to see the harvest reaped in that sense. Job will be vindicated in the end, as God in his goodness promises all those who trust him will be. And what else won't you have space for in your theology if you've no place for the suffering of the righteous? Who that was innocent ever perished? Remember Eliphaz asking that? Well, God's answer to that question is to place a large wooden cross at the heart of the universe. Totally contra human wisdom, and totally glorious. God's way is not to give us neat answers now to all of our why questions, but as we fix our eyes on the innocent one who perished on our behalf, we can be sure that God is good. Shall we pray?